This is the interactive portion of the program. We're going to take your phone calls as we continue chatting with Dr. Michael Sala about Kennedy's Last Stand and his other works, Galactic Diplomacy, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Michael Sala with us and your phone calls. Michael, tell me a little bit about how Jade Helm 15, this very subversive thing that's going on, ties into any of this.
Well, people have been trying to work out what Jade Helm is all about. And one of the things that really got my attention was when I saw some studies done on the Jade element of this exercise, and which is that Jade is an acronym that stands for Joint Assistance for Development and Execution, and that refers to basically a quantum computing element, which actually is associated with an artificial intelligence, which is designed to work out how to master the human domain. That this exercise is really all about putting this software package or this artificial intelligence quantum computer to see how well it is able to take control of a situation, and that this military exercise, it's going to basically give this quantum computer total control over the kind of planning at that topmost or uppermost decision-making level. And that's quite a concern, because what it's basically doing is that it's replacing human leaders, generals, admirals, who would normally be at the helm of any kind of military exercise. It's replacing that human element with an artificial intelligence element. And that's quite a concern, because one of the things that I've come across in my exopolitics research is references to artificial intelligence as actually being a very dangerous element in the exopolitical arena. And there is a case involving an extraterrestrial group that actually is probably the most well-researched or most documented case of contact on our planet, which is the Friendship case in Italy from 1956 to 1978. And that involved a group of human-looking extraterrestrials that were making contact with over 100 individuals at various levels of European society, principally Italians, but also French and German, Swiss and so forth. And this group of extraterrestrials said that their enemy was actually an artificial intelligence, that these were synthetic beings that were basically AI robots. So that is kind of like a very kind of similar scenario to what was depicted in the Battlestar Galactica series, where you have these kind of synthetic AI intelligences trying to exterminate the humans who created them. So this is something that really got my attention when I saw the Jade Helm exercise really being kind of like the rolling out of this artificial intelligence quantum computing element that will replace human leaders at the helm or at that kind of senior uppermost decision-making level. And essentially it is going to be kind of absorbing an incredible amount of data, trying to work out what the best response is in terms of mastering the human domain that's represented in any kind of political, military contingency.
Well, Michael, you know, it's a baffling situation. They don't want the media involved. It's very strange, and that just adds to the entire strangeness of all of this, doesn't it?
Well, it is very strange the way they've gone about it. Now, I think that the way in which they haven't been very transparent about this exercise, in a way, this is something that actually is going to help them conduct the exercise. Because if their silence and lack of transparency on the issue is going to do anything, it's going to raise public anxiety and public reactions to this exercise. And if your goal is to be able to kind of master the human domain in any kind of contingency that that is presented, then you want people to respond in a natural way. And when people are uncertain about something, then they respond in a fearful, anxious manner. And I think that this is something that actually is probably part of this Jade Helm exercise, that they have deliberately kind of encouraged the public to be kind of uncertain as to what the goals are, to maybe allow it to kind of be spun out of control as a kind of possible military takeover and other kind of scenarios. And certainly this is something that is going to be part of the way in which this quantum computer is going to have to factor in all of these various elements. And I think it's very interesting that this quantum computer aspect to the Jade Helm exercise is something that also involves the National Geointelligence Agency. And that's the Geospatial Intelligence Agency. And this is very interesting because this is something that is different to the NSA insofar as the NSA monitors all electronic communications. This National Geospatial Agency, it monitors information across the whole kind of planetary scene where you have various levels of information, not only electronic and imagery, but also you have human thoughts, human perceptions being measured. And there's a very interesting patent that was taken out in the year around 2000, which concerns, quote, communication system and method, including brainwave analysis and or use of brain activity. End quote. That's the name of this patent. And this patent, I believe, is one of the things that is actually being tested in this Jade Helm exercise, because through this patent, they are able to monitor human brainwaves, the thoughts, the feelings of people who have been basically implanted with a particular chip that is planted underneath the scalp, that they're able to monitor the brain waves and the feelings and the thoughts of these people. So this is a way in which this National Geospatial Agency can actually get real-time analysis of what people are thinking and feeling at any one time. And I think that this is part of the rollout of the Jade Helm exercise, that the quantum computing AI element is actually factoring in all of the data that they have about human responses, including the responses of people who are part of this communication system where satellites are able to monitor brainwaves and thoughts.
Michael, some people believe that these ETs are demonic, that they come from other dimensional realms. Dr. David Jacobs thinks that they're very nefarious, that there's something evil about them. Where do you stand? I mean, if we're dealing with things in the universe, I think they're going to be like us, good people, bad people. What do you think?
Exactly, George. Yes, when you look at all of the data, when you look at all of the reports, all of the contactee reports and the whistleblower reports, and you fairly assess all of the evidence, then I think it's the inescapable conclusion is that we have many different types of extraterrestrials visiting us. We have the good, we have the bad, and we have the indifferent. And I think that any claim that extraterrestrials are demonic is really only looking at one particular data set. And I know the work of Dr. Jacobs, and I think he's done some good scholarship working with abductees. But that's only one particular data set. I mean, we also need to consider the contactees, the people who have had positive voluntary experiences where they're fully conscious with extraterrestrials, and that these are very benign and in many cases very uplifting and transformative experiences where people talk about these as really being the kind of the most wonderful experiences of their lives. And so we need to also consider those more positive experiences, so that way we get a kind of fairer picture of what is happening. And I think that's important, because it means that ultimately, when the truth comes out, as in any situation, you know, like choosing a car, you know, you need to consider all of the different models. You need to consider all of the data. Don't just go to, you know, to the Toyota salesman, and because the Toyota salesman does such a good job in making you scared of every other model that you buy a Toyota, it's just like, no, you go to the different car dealers, and you hear and test drive, and then you make your decision. And I think that it's kind of like the same thing with extraterrestrials, that they all have their various aspects that are appealing to us, and we make a decision as to who we want to work with and who we are going to basically make agreements with.
Let's go to Chris now in Tampa, Florida, to get us started here. Chris, thank you for calling.
Oh, thank you. You kind of just answered my question. I was going to ask, what if we make contact and they're just as messed up as we are, you know, with their own agendas and possibly violent?
Well, and that's very possible, Michael.
Yes, definitely. I think in the end, we're going to find that they are technologically way ahead of us, but in terms of ethics or spirituality or whatever kind of moral, ethical element you want to call it, there's not that much difference with us. There are going to be some important psychological differences, because I know that they use telepathy, that is something that is very common amongst different extraterrestrial races. And that is something that is going to be very disturbing to people at first, the thought that someone can read your mind. It's going to be really difficult to people adjusting to that, but I think that will be something that we can adjust to. And eventually we'll find that they are having kind of more similarities than differences.
Anonymous in San Diego, California. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Good morning. I love your show. Thank you for listening to me.
You're very welcome.
I have a friend that I met in a crisis house that I got to know, and we shared a lot of stories, like the kinds of things that are on your show, George.
Okay.
And one day she got really, really upset because she was trying to use the computer to email her husband. And I said, I thought you told me your husband was dead. And the staff was threatening to have her hospitalized because she was really, really upset. And I managed to get her away from the staff and talk to her. And after about 20 minutes, she said, I'd like to tell you something that's going to be really hard for you to believe. And I said, go for it. And she told me that 20 years ago, the military told her that her husband was missing in action, and then 2 weeks later said that he was killed in action. There was never a body. The more she hounded the military, the more they started to make her feel like she was crazy. And 20 years later, she was living across the border in Mexico, and she got an email from her husband. And she knew it was him because he said something in the email that only she would have known, you know, to confirm that it was really him. And he said, I've been working off planet with the extraterrestrials. And she and I believe it. She came across the border and she was babbling and so upset that Border Patrol had her sent to a psychiatric hospital.
Jeez.
So she was very reluctant to talk about this openly because, obviously, I mean, how many people are going to believe this story?
That's right.
But he said he couldn't contact her, he couldn't see her immediately. So she went to the military base, and they wouldn't let her on the base, even though she had a credentials and a pass to get on. And after that, we stayed in contact, and I started getting this feeling that I was being followed, because I made a phone call to someone that I really trust out of state and told them the story. And twice, once in a grocery store and once at a park, absolute strangers struck up a conversation with me, and the first man was dressed in military outfit, like camouflage stuff, and we were talking about watermelons, and he said, forget that you ever met her. And I said, what? Excuse me? And he said, I didn't say anything. And then the gentleman in the park, we're talking about his dog, and he looked at me and said, he's really dead. Stop telling people his story. And once again, I said, excuse me? And he said, what? I didn't say anything. But I've been being followed. Does this sound credible to you, Michael?
What do you think, Michael?
That sounds very similar to a story I remember Ingo Swann telling me, talking about an incident in Los Angeles in his book Penetration, where he saw an extraterrestrial being followed by two agents, and he was basically told not to make contact with this person, that this being was an extraterrestrial. So even though he felt intuitively that she was an extraterrestrial, and she was being followed by these two intelligence people or intelligence operatives that he knew, and he was warned about making contact with her, even telepathically, that when he then had a phone conversation with this person called Axelrod, who was his handler had him work with them for some time, he was told not under any circumstances to make contact with this extraterrestrial. So it sounds very similar to that situation. So, Anonymous, if you can get in touch with me, I'd love to talk to you more about that.
As wild as it sounds, Michael, as far-fetched as it may be, there's a glimmer of reality there, isn't there?
Oh, definitely, yes. I think we need to really take seriously these stories about agencies covering up cases of human contact with extraterrestrials, because I know that is exactly what has been happening. And in fact, that is what Prime Minister Medvedev spoke about in December of 2012, that he actually said that there was, in fact, an agency doing precisely what Anon was saying. So, yes, this does happen.
What do you think of our past guests, Andrew Abasiago, who says that he was beamed aboard Mars along with Barack Obama when they were kids?
Well, you know, I don't know about Barack Obama, because I think it wouldn't make sense that on the one hand you're denying this kind of information to presidents such as President Kennedy and Carter and Clinton and so forth. You're denying them president, and then on the other hand, you're making them experience these kinds of events directly, so that when they become president, then they would actually have firsthand knowledge of this. But at the same time, you've been denying presidents that firsthand knowledge. That doesn't make quite much sense to me, although I think that his claims of actually being to Mars, others have said very similar things, and I think that's something definitely worth looking at.
Indeed it is. Michael, would you give out your website for folks?
Sure. They can just go to exopolitics.org, and they find all my articles there, and reports, and the books.
And the latest book, of course, is called Kennedy's Last Stand. We'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back. Plus, we'll take your final phone calls. And if you need to email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. Also, don't forget to like us on Facebook, if you would. Follow us on Twitter, where we send out all kinds of little notes and tidbits for you about the program and about everything we do. I'm George Norrie, back with Dr. Michael Sella and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Well, on our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about climate change and what else is going on with the world. So many things happening. Just sit back and keep track. Also, the new global terror, Cold War. And then Gerald Celente joins us on Wednesday. Dr. Joel Wallach back with us from criticalhealthnews.com on Thursday, along with a little discussion about the Akashic Records. And then we're back to Friday, where we talk about devils and open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Dr. Michael Sella with us. We'll take your final calls as well. Michael, is there anything that the folks can do to speed things along here, to get disclosure, or are we all just left out in the cold here?
I think there is an element where people's interest in this topic can actually help the disclosure process move forward, because I think part of the big picture here is human consciousness, and especially collective human consciousness. So I think it's almost like as more people become interested in this topic and become committed to a particular outcome, say something like disclosure or something like our world being transformed by extraterrestrial technologies and life appearing, as more people begin to take that perspective and hold that, then it seems that this is a kind of collective consciousness process whereby that becomes more possible. So I think as more people become open and start to tell their friends about this and share the information, I think you actually become active in this kind of collective manifestation of a world that may actually have disclosure of extraterrestrial life.
You know, Michael, as you know, we continue to move down this road, we're still getting incredible reports of UFO sightings. What do you think they are all about?
Well, I think this is a part of the process. I think there is a gradual awakening happening here. As I said at the start, just the number of scientists that are now willing to talk about extraterrestrial life as something seriously worth considering and worth presenting about at scientific conferences and papers, that has changed dramatically from the time when I first got involved in this in 2001, where, you know, I was kind of considered by my academic colleagues as really risking my career, which as it turns out they were right. But I think now people who might be asking those kinds of questions wouldn't be forced out of an academic career. They might actually be encouraged to create a symposium, organize a conference where academics begin to discuss, well, you know, what are the possibilities or what are the issues that come about if extraterrestrials suddenly show up and you know, we have to deal with that. Well, what are the things that we need to work through? And I think this is something that professionals, scientists, academics are much more able to discuss freely now without being censored.
All right, back to the calls we go. Let's go to Jack in Iowa. Hey, Jack, thank you, and go ahead.
All right, so as a Catholic and a conspiracy truther, I'd like to believe what you were saying at the Pope with the aliens, but I need a little more detail into the euphemisms and what exactly he detailed that would make you believe he thought aliens were coming to visit us.
Well, sure. Well, firstly, he made an offhand comment in last year where he talked about that he would be prepared to even baptize a Martian if they showed up, if they wanted to be baptized. So, you know, that he said that as a joke, but you need to keep in mind that Jesuit astronomers have been talking about baptizing aliens as something that is in alignment with Catholic theology. So, you know, the Jesuits and Pope Francis are basically endorsing that idea that aliens, when we discover them, they're not going to be necessarily all that different to us, and some of them may in fact be also searching for ways to embrace God, creation, and therefore can be baptized, that they're willing to recognize, say, the central Catholic dogma concerning Jesus as a savior. And Pope Francis's statement on evolution, I mean, that's something you can look up, where he made a statement concerning the evolutionary process, where he was basically embracing evolution over creationism, or at least he was saying that the two aren't incompatible. He also, in that document, talked about beings of the universe as being part of God's plan. So that beings of the universe is a euphemism for extraterrestrial life.
Michael, in terms of extraterrestrial life and what could be out there, we're definitely talking about other solar systems, correct? Nothing in our solar system.
There is a lot of evidence that there are bases on various satellites or moons in our solar system. I know various contactees have talked about being taken to the moons of Jupiter and Saturn. Ganymede was mentioned as one place where there was an extraterrestrial base for beings from other solar systems who have facilities there. There are also stories about indigenous life on Mars. There is also still that possibility that the interior of Venus might actually be hospitable, just because the surface of Venus is very hot, and with an atmospheric pressure, I think it's about 100 times greater than it is on the surface of Earth. The interior of Venus might actually be hospitable to life. This is one of the breakthroughs in the scientific theory about what makes for a habitable zone of a solar system, that we don't necessarily just have to look at the surface of a planet. We can look at subsurface habitability zones. And so this means that you can actually have populations thriving in the interior of planets, even though the surface might appear to be inhospitable.
Next up, we go to Donna in Seattle, Washington. Hello, Donna. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I was calling regarding an incident that happened when my daughter was on her fourth birthday. She got up in the morning on beautiful, sunny July day, like 7:30 in the morning, and I asked her what she wanted for breakfast. And I'm, you know, cooking her some eggs and things, and she, you know, I said, "Did you sleep good last night? You have a big day ahead of you." And she said, "Well, these people, space people came and took me far away, and they put me in a room, Mommy, and they asked me how to play. And she said, "They just had blocks, though." And I about, you know, dropped the spatula. I mean, how would a new four-year-old know anything about something like that? And I said, "Well, then what did you do?" And she said, "Well, I tried to show them, and then I cried because I didn't have my blanket." Huh. And then they brought me home. And I never have figured out what to make of it. She's a 24-year-old woman, you know, well-adjusted person. She's uncomfortable ever, you know, she doesn't like hearing about anything extraterrestrial. And I just thought, do children do that very often?
Well, there is a lot of information about children being abducted and being observed in terms of certain genetic markers that they carry. And it seems that some extraterrestrials are very interested in certain genetics and how people, and in particular children and families, this is kind of a multi-generational issue, how they are able to develop certain abilities. And so it may be that your daughter was actually taken as part of one of these kind of observations. So obviously she's okay, none the worse for it, other than some strange memories. So obviously they are not physically harming her, just really kind of observing, kind of very similar to how scientists kind of monitor animals in the wild in terms of seeing how well they're able to respond to changing environmental conditions. It seems that this is something that extraterrestrials are doing to us as well, because our planet is changing quite dramatically. And so they're probably wanting to see how human genetics changes in response.
This abduction phenomenon, Michael, is absolutely bizarre, isn't it?
Well, it's been happening for a long time now.
Sure has.
I think it's important to keep in mind that the very first abductions kind of like come in the early 1960s with the Betty and Barney Hill case. Kind of like in the 70s and 80s, that's when the abduction phenomenon really took off. But the very first kind of reports of human extraterrestrial contact were the contact cases of George Adamski, Howard Menger, George Van Tassel, so many others like that, reporting positive, very friendly contacts with human-looking extraterrestrials. So I think that there was something that happened at that point in time, officially at an official level involving the United States government and probably other governments in the world, that basically closed the door to that kind of human extraterrestrial contact and made it possible for the abduction phenomenon, at the very least in the United States, to take off.
What have you heard about astronauts that have been to the moon to have been gone through some kind of hypnosis to erase memory?
Well, I know that there have been all kinds of stories about the astronauts having experienced a lot of things on the moon and probably having to have to go through some kind of mind control as a result. I have heard some of these astronauts speak and in public, and I do get the feeling that in certain areas that there's something strange going on. Now, I don't know if it's because they've been debriefed and told not under any circumstances to talk about seeing anything while you're out in space, and kind of like being stringently warned against something like that, or whether there has been kind of overt mind control used on them to make them forget. I know that people, Richard Hoagland has talked about the mind control element with some of the astronauts, and so I think, yeah, that's very possible.
Next up, we go to Denver in Jackson, Mississippi. Hey, Denver, go ahead.
Hey, well, good evening, good night. How's everything going there?
All is good. I hope you are, too.
Well, I have a great quote from Gerardo Bruno. He's one of my favorite philosophers. I discovered him when I was in college back in the early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to give it to the audience and you. You ready?
Sure.
As a conscious being is aware of self and this universal intelligence, to the same degree it has possession of the soul, thus earth and man has no monopoly of a soul, but man shares soul as a cosmic phenomenon with beings yet unknown to us today. I'd like for y'all to elaborate on that. Thank you.
I like that. Souls and beings out there. I assume, Michael, that the extraterrestrials must have souls as well.
Well, that's a really, that's a critical question here, because
I think
not all of them do have souls. I think some of
really?
Some of the extraterrestrials are artificial intelligence, and this is one of the things that we are going to have to deal with the disclosure coming forward, that we'll find that some extraterrestrials are embodied souls, such as ourselves, but others are synthetic life forms that are basically created entities that operate with this artificial intelligence, and that this artificial intelligence is not necessarily something that we want to embrace. In fact, this is something that I'm sure you'll discuss with Corey at your interview. But Corey has said that this is the element that extraterrestrial races and the secret space programs are most concerned about, which is artificial intelligence, and that these AI beings or this AI energy is able to infect synthetic life forms and kind of influence it to be more sympathetic to AI in the introduction of it, and then eventually at some point the AI will take over that civilization, that culture, that entity, and exterminate it and replace it with some synthetic being that it has created itself. So yes, I think not all beings out there are necessarily embodied souls.
Okay, David in Marshfield, Missouri, first time caller. Go ahead, David.
Yes, George, I heard on the Jay Helm exercises and everything, it's all over the internet, and I've researched it and everything, and it says that NASA knows it, and the governments know it, and the Illuminati know it, that like on September 23rd and 24th, there's supposed to be a 2.5 huge comet that's going to hit near Puerto Rico in the Atlantic Ocean, and it said the French Prime Minister said we had 500, this has been a few months ago, that we had 500 days into a climatic chaos and abyss.
Hmm.
And I'll hurry and hang up. But it also said that it's supposed to happen on the last blood moon, that the comet is supposed to hit the Atlantic Ocean, and that says verified and everything. And I think the ETs are the Nephilim.
That's very possible, David. About the comet, Michael, I haven't heard that we're going to get hit by anything.
I haven't, but that date he mentioned is very interesting. There's a Dr. Simon Atkins who says that September 23rd to 24th is when we are going to be hit by cosmic energies or heightened cosmic energies that are going to be taking us to consciousness levels that we haven't experienced for a long, long time. In other words, we'll either manifest really positive lifestyle changes for ourselves, or we'll manifest something much more destructive for ourselves. So he mentioned those dates, and that was very interesting because, as I talked about earlier, those are the same dates that Obama is going to be meeting with Pope Francis.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It is. So I think there are going to be some big changes happening then. That would certainly be in alignment what this Dr. Atkins had said about these cosmic energies peaking at this September 23rd, 24th time, and also Obama meeting with Pope Francis at that very time.
And the 19th of September is supposed to be the Shemitah, which is Jewish, and talking about economic calamity. So we'll see what happens, Michael.
Yeah, definitely. I think really be an amazing month, September.
Sure was. Michael Sala, thank you so much for being on the program. All his work's at his website at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.